I'm going to read from the Old Testament, Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 to 10. Exodus 2, 1 to 10. And the man of the house of Levi went and took as wife a daughter of Levi. So the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the child wept. So she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the maiden went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." This actually has always been one of my favorite questions asked in the Bible. I read it and I say, now this is chutzpah. "Do you want me to go find a nurse for this boy?" "Go." And he comes back with the mother. And then Pharaoh's daughter says, "I'll pay you raising for me." You know, the book of Proverbs actually admires. Have you noticed how I refer to the book of Proverbs more often than I used to? I've been going through it. The book of Proverbs admires very much the right word at the right time, just said in a clever fashion. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. And I think you've all had the experience of just knowing the exact right word to say at the right time, and it just accomplishes exactly what you wanted. And that's this girl's question. Shall I go find a nurse for this child? I was trying to think of some memory I have of such a, the right word at the right time. When my mother and Aunt Libby came to visit us when we lived in Athens in 1978-79, we went into town, and my mother says to me, "I'll buy shirts, little tourist shirts, for John and Betsy." And I said, "Okay, but, the prices are too high here." So I said, I'll bargain for it. So I set out to bargain with the girl selling the shirts, and quickly switched from English to Greek. That got her attention. And I'm going for about 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm working hard and getting nowhere. And she says to me, "You're very good at this." And I said, "No, I'm not. You haven't changed your price a bit." And she laughed and dropped it by a third. Which was my intended reaction. And I've gotten delight in remembering that ever since, that I had the right thing to say at that point. I wonder how many times Miriam got to tell the story, and then I ran down to Pharaoh's daughter and I said, and could not have gotten a better reaction. You've got three women in the story: the mother, the sister, and Pharaoh's daughter. As I said this morning, the first 1.5 chapters in Exodus is the focus is on the women protecting the men. And so we have these three. I want to talk about the mother first, and then about Pharaoh's daughter, and then about the big sister. You'll notice in this chapter their names aren't given. All right, the only name given in what we just read is Moses. So there's no name given for the mother or the father or Pharaoh's daughter or the sister. They're just there. But we actually know the name of the mother, and it's given in Exodus chapter 6, verse 20, where when I read it, I said, oh, I never noticed this before. So listen to the name of Moses' mother, and you may pick up what I never noticed or didn't remember having noticed before. This is genealogy of Levi's family, which is the tribe that Moses is from. Now, Amram, that turns out to be Moses' father, took for himself Jochebed, that turns out to be Moses' mother, his father's sister, as wife. I never noticed the phrase, his father's sister. So, Moses' parents are aunt and nephew. Or, anyway, aunt and nephew. So, they're marrying within the tribe. This was before the law of Moses said, don't do such a thing. And so, there they are. Very familiar in Egypt, however, where they had a lot of brother-sister marriages, especially among the royal house. So it wouldn't have stood out. So they married. And now the first thing I want you to notice about these two children of Levi, Amram and Jochebed, is that they were enslaved and oppressed. They work for Pharaoh in the fields. They work building houses. The Bible is as clear as could be that there's a heavy hand on them. And they got married. Wealth was not the issue where marriage is concerned. Now, if you pay attention to contemporary writing about American society, one of the developments in the last 30 years is that college-educated people and the wealthy are marrying. And people nowadays with a lot less education are not marrying. I just read a long article about this again. And because right now our leaders can only think of one explanation for anything, which is money, poverty, economics. That's the only explanation they can think of. They can say, well, because of the economics of the poorer classes, that's why they're not marrying. And I just want to point out, there are other things involved in the society than economics, other things involved in people's choices as to whether marry or not, other things involved in whether people live together without marriage with somebody, right? Well, lots of other things involved than just economics. And economics cannot be quite so crucial. These two were in worse shape economically than any two you could pick in our society. And they marry. Now, the next thing I want you to notice is, having married, what did they do? They had children. At least three. Because Moses turns out to be the third child, at least. There may be others, but we know he's the third. There is Miriam, there is Moses, and there is Aaron. Or in the order, probably Miriam, Aaron, and Moses. I haven't heard it so much recently, but I heard it sometimes 20 years ago. Sometimes even from young married Christians. And they would often say it piously, I don't want to bring any child into this awful, awful world. How many of you have heard people say that? Oh man, isn't it? It's common. And every time I've heard it, I've thought, you've got it figured out. When you have a kid, it's 24/7. How many of you have recently discovered that it's 24/7? There is no more demanding boss in the world than a small child, this sort of little pre-verbal tyrant that God gives us when he is born. And I hear over and over again from people with the first child, oh, I didn't quite know it would be like this. And when people say, honestly, I don't want the bother of having children, I can have a certain respect for that. But when people come up with lame excuses, This world is so awful. Life is so terrible. I wouldn't bring a child into this world. No, I'm too good to do that. And now I'm talking about married couples. I have zero patience for that. Your world is way, way, way better than the world of Amram and Jochebed. Now, did they know how to prevent having children? Actually, yes. I won't go into the history of it, but yes, they knew. Not all the modern ways, and maybe not quite as convenient, but they knew. So that's not it. What was it? Well, the children of Israel took God at His word that children are a blessing, and that He would bless Israel by making them as numerous as the sand on the sea and the stars in the sky, and that didn't happen just automatically. It happened with family after family after family after family going ahead and bearing children, even into the most awful and oppressive existence that you could probably imagine, working 7 days a week as slaves in Pharaoh's country with no hope of getting out and no hope of relief. Even to the point of bearing children and you might have your boys taken from you and killed. And they went ahead and they had children because they lived by faith in the promises of God. And they took God at His word. And last time Tim was here visiting, it looks like Mountain Man now, right? So Tim was here, and he was talking to me about the. I think he liked the phrase he read somewhere, the anti-natalist thinking, so common in this country. And what that big word means is simply anti-children. The whole West is becoming anti-children. Don't want to deal with them. Don't want to have them. Don't want to bother with them. All kinds of excuses. And they're all lame if you think about the children of Israel in Egypt. And they went ahead and they bore children. Anything you could say about why having children might be a gamble today would be in spades for them. So they had two children, and we know the names. The older sister was Miriam. The older brother is Aaron. Aaron had lived. The midwives had saved him. And it seems to be obvious the Egyptian neighbors just rarely killed the baby boys. Pharaoh said to, but the inhumanity of going to your neighbor, grabbing the baby boy and throwing him into the river, that was beyond, I suspect, almost all of the Egyptian neighbors. The government had other things to do with its relatively few number of soldiers. And my guess is it came on and off, the pressure to kill the baby boys. And certainly it was far from successful because Israel kept growing. Nancy Gantz has a child's commentary on the book of Exodus, which I have at home. And she speculates, now, when they knew that another child was coming, did they pray for a girl so that she would be sure to live? Or did they pray for a boy? Her opinion is they prayed for a girl. I have no opinion on the subject. For the nation to grow and continue, of course, they needed both boys and girls. As I noted before, this is an echo of, sad echo of places in the world where they abort one child sex and they keep the other sex. And it's not as new, unfortunately, in world history as it should be. Shouldn't be there at all. Well, God gave them a boy. And I like the King James translation, which our translation does not keep. Our translation says, she saw he was a beautiful child. The King James translation says, they saw he was a goodly child. And the Hebrew word is the same word as that used in Genesis chapter 1, verse 4. God saw the light that it was good. And the point seems to be that just as God declared His pure creation good at the beginning, so the parents see this boy and they say, this is as perfect a boy as one could ever imagine. This is a goodly, beautiful, and perfect son. So they hit him. I assume the heat was back on. They lived close to Pharaoh. And perhaps the soldiers were actually going around and rounding up baby boys and killing them. Like I said, it probably went on and off. And they hit him. The Bible gives the credit to the mother. The mother hit him. And then at the end of 3 months, they couldn't keep the child hidden forever because they get louder and louder as they get older. And so he wouldn't be able to be hiding. And then she did something unique. I've been trying to figure out what was in her mind. She made a little boat. She used the reeds there by the Nile River, the bulrushes, covered it over with asphalt and pitch, maybe stealing a little bit of the building materials that the slaves worked with for building the cities, put a cover on it, took it down to the river, said goodbye to her three-month-old son, nursed him for the last time, put him in the boat, put the lid on, and left. And she was out of his life. Every now and then I read accounts of mothers who gave up their children for adoption. And she's essentially giving up this son for adoption to whatever would happen there in the water. Left behind, either at her own initiative, which is quite possible, or at the mother's initiative, is the big sister. There's a little irony in what the mother does. She's obeying the letter of Pharaoh's law, isn't she? If you have a boy, throw him in the river. So she's obeyed. The boy is in the river. And now we come to Pharaoh's daughter. The second woman in the story, who happened to come to the Nile to bathe, came with her attendants who walked along the riverside. This is her idea. It's her choice. But, you know, the Bible says we choose our steps and the Lord directs our path. And this woman is doing God's will in her life, and she has no clue that she's doing God's will in her life. So she's there in the water. And curiosity. At what age did you outgrow being curious? I've been watching, we watch Julian 2 days a week, and, curious, more curious, and most curious of all is just all day long. And I'm still curious about stuff, but not quite as much. Now, other members of my family are still much more curious than I am, and if they see something they've never seen before, they have to touch it and feel it and see what it's like. She's curious. What's that over there? So she sends her maids to go fetch it. And they come back, and it's a toy boat, but a really big toy boat, but a toy nonetheless. And she lifts the top up, and there is a baby boy, and the Bible says he's crying. Did she pick him up? It's hard to imagine she didn't. And the Bible says she had compassion on him. You know, in the pagan world, compassion was often condemned as a womanly weakness. A real man suppressed those feelings, and he did what had to be done, and he didn't feel. That's a lot of pagan culture. And so this daughter of Pharaoh sees the boy and feels compassion, which is more than feeling sorry for. It has this further idea and was determined to save him. So she felt compassion, she said, and I will save him. I wonder if she said to herself, and I am Pharaoh's daughter, and I will save him. You, of course, recognize that Jesus, who turns a number of things upside down, Jesus is often described as having compassion, a weakness, but the weakness that, in Pharaoh's daughter's case, makes her strong enough and determined enough, she's going to defy her father's rule, and she will take one of the Hebrew boys, and she will protect and care for him.
Does she know what she's doing? The Bible makes it clear she knows exactly what she's doing. She says, this is one of the Hebrews' children. It's one of the wonderful things in our lives is that often help comes from unexpected places when we don't look for it there. I don't know, how many of you have read George MacDonald's The Princess and the Goblin? Okay, some of you. It's a great children's book. And there's a successor sequel called The Princess and Curdie, which I actually like better than the original one, The Princess and the Goblin. And in The Princess and Curdie, as Curdie is set off on a journey and a quest to save the kingdom, figure that represents God in the story, the great grandmother that comes and sees him sometimes, says to him, you go, and along the way, help will come from unexpected places. Watch for it. So where does help for Israel come from? Well, it's Moses. And where does help for Moses come from? It's Pharaoh's daughter. Where did help come from for the prophets of God in Israel when Ahab was killing them? Do you remember? Obadiah, who was Ahab's steward. Obadiah, Ahab's steward, took the prophets 50 at a time, hid them in caves, and fed them from Ahab's budget. Help that Ahab never suspected was going there. One of my favorite stories I've told before from the what are known as the killing times in Scotland in the 1670s was one of the Covenanters brought before a magistrate, going to be thrown in jail, and the magistrate is mocking him, saying, now who will feed you? Because in those days, you didn't get fed unless the family members brought you food in jail. And he was short of family members. So he's mocking him and says, and who will feed you now? And he answered, if God so wills, I will be fed from your table. And the magistrate's wife was there and heard this and was so impressed, she secretly sent him food all the time he was in prison from the magistrate's table. How God likes to do those kinds of things. And Pharaoh's daughter is the one who picks up Moses and says, it must be one of the Hebrews' children. And then we have the third woman in the story, the big sister. The big sister watching. Can you imagine the thoughts going through the big sister's mind as she sees Pharaoh's daughter be the one to come and discover the baby? I'm thinking the thought is, how could things get worse? Could there be a worse person than somebody from Pharaoh's own household to come up and find my little brother? And so she watches. Now, how old is she? The Hebrew word is the word for young, marriageable, unmarried woman. So in that world, she's 12, 13, 14, or 15. So when I was working on the sermon, I sort of imagined Miriam as about the age of my granddaughter, Mary. And, of course, Moses, Julian filled that spot just a few months back. And Mary, who does sometimes know how to say exactly what should be said, here's Miriam. She comes running to the riverbank. And she has no idea what's going to come of her question, but it's the right one. She sees Pharaoh's daughter have compassion on her little brother, and there's an opening. And so she says quickly, shall I summon a nurse for you from the Hebrew women? Just the right language, summon. That's what Pharaoh's daughter would do. She wouldn't request, she would summon. Shall I summon a nurse for you from the Hebrew women? Of course, Pharaoh's daughter couldn't nurse the boy, so you'd have to find a nurse. The Greeks greatly commended the right word at the right time. So does the book of the Bible. The difference is, the Greeks especially commended the right word at the right time from whom? men. And the Bible commends the right word at the right time from men and women. Boldness, courage, audaciousness, chutzpah. Shall I summon a nurse for you from among the Hebrew women? She even suggests we're not going to bother with the Egyptian women. We're going to get a nurse from the Hebrew women. Not from somebody in the palace. They'd be having babies there. No, from among the Hebrew women. And Pharaoh's daughter says, go. And she goes and she calls the boy's mother. She's not playing for small stakes. She doesn't go to the neighbor who has a baby. Can you help out? She goes right to the boy's mother. And Jochebed comes, a slave. If you picture her coming with humble body language, as we say these days, eyes down and ready to do whatever Pharaoh's daughter says. Ready to receive orders from the master. And Pharaoh's daughter says, take the child, nurse him, and I will pay you. I love the I will pay you part. So, the mother took Moses home. She nursed him. I'm guessing she strung out the nursing as long as possible. She nursed him. Taught him how to walk. She nursed him while he took his first words. Finally, the boy was old enough, maybe 3, maybe 4. Enough time to begin teaching him that he is a Hebrew. He is one who should know God. And as he grows, this boy is under somebody's protection. Pharaoh's daughter's protection. Finally, he's taken over to Pharaoh's daughter. She names him Moses. Moses is an Egyptian word. Not a Hebrew word. And in the ancient Egyptian, it means born one. The idea being this one was born out of the Nile, which in the Egyptian thinking was a god. It sounds like the word for draw out in Hebrew. And so I think the Jews later on took the name Moses and indicated, I was drawn out of the water. And just as Moses was drawn out of the water, Israel was saved being drawn out of the Red Sea some years later. One of the things that I enjoy reading the Gospels is that Jesus always had the right word at the right time in the right way, often crushing for his enemies and greatly encouraging for those who followed him. Often, however, crushing sometimes to his followers also when they needed it. The disciples, Peter and John, were known for being bold like Jesus. Courage, commended in the Bible. Boldness, commended in the Bible. A quick wit, commended in the Bible. Commended to all believers, young and old, male and female. Let your speech be seasoned with salt, Paul says. And the older sister embodies that quality of Jesus Christ and often of God's people. At the right time, in the right way, with the right words, just precisely the right question, shall I go and summon a nurse for you from among the Hebrew women? And Pharaoh's daughter says, yes, go. And she comes back with her mother. And Pharaoh's daughter says, do this for me, nurse him, and I'll pay you. God makes things work according to his plan, even when people oppose and try to destroy it in the most brutal fashion. And we have that in this story. The question, shall I go and summon a nurse? Now, I can't imagine any of you ever finding a time when you want to use exactly that question. But that readiness to strike and say the right thing at the right time, that is something that comes to all of us.